good going?
We're good.
Okay.
So the Cameron Park Community Services District's regular board meeting for the 21st of May is called to order at 6:36 p.m. Please call the roll.
Sorry, too many things at once. I apologize. Director Scobie?
Here.
Director Wolfson?
Here.
Director Bazette?
Here.
And Director Israel?
Here.
And Director Gilchrist?
Here.
Okay, and could you please
you wouldn't call the list.
Well, I was going to pick on the guy who wasn't here last
week. Oh, okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're going to observe a moment of silence now to honor our service members.
I wanted to also say that it's honoring the law enforcement, fire, and our emergency personnel, first responders, all of them.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. So, moving to the adoption of the agenda, I know we had a couple of changes. Did anybody from the board have anything?
Well, I think Mo covered the one I wanted to get switched.
So yeah, we were going to move item 19 in front of 14 and then move 16 in front of 15. Was there anything else that anybody wanted to change or pull? Okay, so hearing none, did we have any...
Oh, so one quick thought on number 15, the public hearing. I know there's a number of documents and a number of questions,
mm-hmm.
So I just want to put it out there. If we need to continue that item
mm-hmm.
For official vote to the next meeting, just know that we can do that. But I don't want to put that out there first.
Okay. All right. Do we have any comments from the public regarding the agenda? Bringing it back to the board, do we have a motion?
I just wanted to comment, it's a very lengthy agenda, so anything we can do to shorten this agenda would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, sir.
I move to approve the agenda with the changes proposed.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Moving on to the next item, which is a presentation from the California Special Districts Association.
Thank you, Director. Appreciate it. Good evening, everyone. My name is Dane Wadley, field coordinator with the California Special Districts Association. So I know you guys, the district's quite familiar with CSDA. A number of you have been very involved through our trainings and our advocacy work. I'm getting the field liaison to the special districts here in Colorado County. Just wanted to come by. It's I know you to your point about it being a lengthy agenda, so I'll be quick as well. But I thought it was appropriate to come by this evening as we literally just finished our legislative day's event down in the state capitol the past 2 days. A bunch of districts came in and we were lobbying in the state legislature like we do on your behalf. And so I thought I would just give you a real quick update on that and let you guys obviously move along. The first thing, we have a couple bills, two in the state legislature that we're really following, very engaged in, and then one federally as well, which I'll get to. So the first bill, and I have this all written out, I'll give you the information, so feel free to just listen as opposed to having to track everything down. But the first one is Assembly Bill 259. This bill actually, a very appropriate day with a director who's participating virtually, This would basically extend the ability for directors to participate in board meetings virtually under, you know, unique circumstances past this year. The actual authority ends this year in current law, and our bill would extend it basically for four more years, essentially, to be able, in these unique circumstances, to be able to participate like you guys are having done tonight. We feel it's appropriate, give some flexibility to districts and the board members to obviously, you know, do your work. If something comes up that's unique, that necessitates a virtual presence, you know, attendance and engagement and involvement. So that's AB 259. That bill has been moving along so far, so it's obviously a bill that we're supporting. The second bill we're supporting, which has also been moving along so far, is Senate Bill 496. So a little bit of a backstory. About 18 months ago, the California Air Resources Board put in place some regulations pertaining to the transition of local government fleets, like fleet vehicles, right, from basically gas engines to zero-emission vehicles. And, you know, there's, regardless of how you may feel about that transition, there's obviously logistical challenges for districts and local agencies to meet that in terms of infrastructure, obviously getting vehicles, and then just the reliability of them, you know, in circumstances, particularly for our, one of the issues that we're bringing up is, you know, emergency situations or critical situations where you need to have special districts need to be responding, right, to provide services that may be needed by the community in some sort of circumstance like that. So essentially what our bill does is basically gives a little bit of flexibility. It does that by expanding what's called the emergency vehicle exemption, broadening that language, and then also saying, too, that, like, well, you know, we need to have the infrastructure in place, all the charging stations, before you're requiring all local agencies. So this goes for the county and the city as well, along with you guys. We're in this local government partnership on this bill, saying that the infrastructure needs to be put in place before we have all these vehicles. So districts aren't just buying these vehicles and they just sit in the courtyard, right? So those are the two main provisions of it. Again, that bill is also moving forward. So, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out over the legislative process over the next few months. Obviously, continue to watch the state budget process, too. As you may have heard, the governor came out with a budget, May budget revision, which projects a $12 billion deficit for the state. So always kind of gets us a little bit uneasy as to how that may affect special districts and local governments. So we're certainly watching that process over the next, basically, 6 weeks before they have to adopt a budget. Federally, the federal bill I want to touch on. So you may recall CSDA has been very active in the National Special District Association to advocate for special districts as an entity in federal government over the past, well, basically 3 or 4 years. We have a bill this year. It's HR standing for House Resolution for the House Representatives, right? HR 2766, which would define special districts into federal law and then basically enable special districts to be available or to have access to funding, federal funding opportunities that are available for local governments, like cities and counties, and then there were some of the special districts. So, if that bill is just
really not because I'm on my computer.
Just starting in the process. Federally, it's a different process, obviously, in the federal government.
Yeah, I understand.
So we have these two passed state bills, federal bills. So we're keeping busy, and obviously, I just want to reiterate to all, we appreciate your guys' support throughout the years on, you know, our advocacy work and writing letters of support or opposition, as the case may be. You guys have been very helpful. We certainly appreciate that. Last thing I'll mention, again, you guys know the training, so there's obviously a number of training opportunities that continue to be available. And actually, that was the second to last thing. The last thing I'll mention is there's various benefits, right, through CSDA, by virtue of you guys being involved in CSDA. One of our most recent ones is we're giving districts, we have an agreement with Amazon to give Amazon Business Prime access to special districts at no cost. So it's, again, part of something we're able to pass along by virtue of us negotiating on your behalf with Amazon in this case. So we can get some more information to staff about how to move through that process, but just wanted to bring that up to you guys now. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any, of course, or certainly offline, all information in here, and certainly the general manager can get a hold of me. But again, appreciate the time, appreciate your guys' support, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Dan. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, just the one question, that emergency vehicles, is that ambulances and fire engines? Or
the well, the fire engines were already, they were exempted from that from the beginning.
What about ambulances?
I think they fall under that as well. Like fire and
emergency vehicles.
Public safety. Yeah.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the public about the presentation? Yes.
Brad McMullen, Cameron Park. One state you didn't mention was the sales tax exemption for special districts.
Right. And I need to check on that bill. I'm pretty sure that we are in favor of that bill, but I can't say for certain because I don't know for certain.
Okay. So I hope you are.
I don't. Yes, sir.
Special district shouldn't be paying sales tax.
And it's covered in our in the general manager's report.
Okay.
Also.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public questions for Dave about his presentation? Okay. Bring it back to the board. If there's nothing else, did we have any legal counsel updates, or there's nothing?
No legal counsel update. We'll look at moving that line item. It'll probably go near the general manager's report before or after in future meetings. But I do want to introduce Brian Hughes from the BDK law firm, and there's an item on the agenda for you to consider. But directive was given to engage with them. So Brian Hughes is here. More to come in the item down the road.
Welcome.
Can we just make sure the board members all get Brian's contact information?
Yes.
All right, so it is time for general public comments. Anybody who wishes to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, now is your opportunity. Do we have anybody who wants to address the board items not on the agenda? Yes.
Roberta Bailey, Cameron Park. I just want to say we had a successful event today, and I want to thank Tom. And we did have a glitch, and that has to do with the lighting. We can turn down the lights. But anyway, we had a good turnout, and everybody was impressed with the film. And so thank you, because I feel like I had support from the district. And
awesome.
That's
Thank you.
Anybody else? Yes.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody here earlier about mandatory garbage pickup that's made mandatory here in Cameron Park. And I was talking to the waste management people over here about that. A lot of times I'm not here for 3, 4, 5, 6 months out of the year. And there's nobody there to put garbage into a garbage can. So I'm not understanding why that I would have to pay for garbage service that I'm not getting. Because there's no garbage can out in front of the house, no garbage in.
Thank you. And you can talk to the general manager offline about it.
I can talk to who?
The general manager.
Right. Well, that's you.
That's me.
Okay. So can I have like a one-on-one with you?
Absolutely.
Later on during the week or something? Or sure. Now, do you work here?
I work here in the building, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to stop by, we'll definitely get you on our calendar.
Okay.
All right.
Do I have to make an appointment?
You do not. Just come on in. It's better if you call first to make sure we're here, but that will tie in. Cloris, I'll ask you to get his information for me, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Other public comments, items not on the agenda. Okay, I am bringing it back, and we are on the consent calendar. Did we have any questions from the board regarding the consent calendar? Anybody? Okay. All right, anybody out in the audience have any comments about the consent calendar? Okay, hearing none, bringing it back to the board. What do we want to do?
I move that we approve the consent calendar as presented.
Yeah, I second that motion. Oh, yeah, the gentleman is ready.
No, I just wait by him.
Oh,
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
And this will require a roll call vote because we have one.
Okay. So let's have a roll call then.
Right. Director Scobie?
Aye.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Director Bizet?
Aye.
Director Israel?
Aye.
And Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. See, we didn't have any items pulled for discussion, so moving on to general business, and we're starting with item number 19.
19, yeah. Money, the presentation. Take us 2 seconds here to get the presentation up on the screen. And while we do that, I'll introduce Deputy Scott Baer. He's in the back of the room from the Eldorado County Sheriff's Office and the Office of Emergency Services. And then we have Juliana Popery on online with us as well. So I'm going to walk through the presentation, and then I'm going to look to. They are in the meeting. Yeah. Is she logging in still? Okay. And then we'll get the presentation up on the screen here for everybody here. Melissa and Juliana.
Not Juliana. I don't have Juliana on. Yes.
I'm here, but Juliana's still figuring out the Zoom link.
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and get started, if you're good with that, Deputy Baer, and then I'll walk through the presentation and ask you to fill in any of the gaps. And then we've got our experts online that can help us a little bit more with the process. Let me put it on the screen. We have the presentation on the screen.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
Oh, got it. Copy. In case you didn't know, the general manager is also tier 2 support. Watch, I won't be able to get it up here now.
We almost have a glare coming in from somewhere.
Yeah. I think it's through the door.
It's mostly
through
the door.
Yeah.
That helps. Yeah. Thank
Thank you. Okay. And if you can, you start.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Just start the presentation. Gotcha. So, Nikki will go over and get that up on the screen, but I'll go ahead and start here. So, this is a multi-jurisdictional. And so, this is going to be pieced together a little bit because obviously this has been going on for a couple of years now. And so really this is kind of crescendo of all of those efforts
to get us to this point. So I'm picking up kind of midstream. There was a little bit of confusion with respect to El Dorado County Water Agency and this issue, which is why there's a little bit of a delay. So with that being said, we do have Juliana, I believe, is trying to get in with us. And we have Melissa, and obviously Deputy Bear is in the back down there. And so this is really talking about the Cameron Park Community Services District Annex and update. And so this has been a little bit of a year and a half, it looks like. So the Hazard Mitigation Plan is a sustained action taken to reduce or eliminate long-term risk to human life and property from natural and human-caused hazards. And maybe can you plug in the other? It should be on the table. Perfect, thank you. So some of the examples of hazard mitigation include shrinking buildings, elevating flood-prone structures, maintaining defensible space, and limiting development in some of the flood-prone zones. And obviously we have those issues. We just recently had a flooding issue, and so we're prone to that. We're clearly prone to wildfires in this area. I think we had one that we thought was going to get out of a little out of control today, and so they're starting to pop up more and more. So, and obviously, these are the types of things that happen in our area, and so that's why we need that in this plan. The CSD understands the impacts of natural disasters in this region, particularly since the Caldor fire. I think that was an eye-opener for us. We've since also had the mosquito fire up in that area as well. So tonight, absolutely nothing. Next slide. So this act requires commitment to prepare and update the hazard mitigation plan every 5 years to remain eligible for federal pre- and post-disaster funding through the hazard mitigation grant program and building resilient infrastructure and communities, or BRIC programs. Adopting this annex makes the CSD eligible for reimbursement after a federal disaster is declared.
Juliana says she can't hear anything.
Okay. Can Melissa hear?
Yeah, I can hear.
Okay. We might need to work through Melissa.
I apologize. I can hear you.
Okay. Out. I apologize. No worries. So this planning process, the county kicked this planning process off in the fall of 2023, and when they developed the Hazard Mitigation Plan Committee. So representing Cameron Park CSD, I did a little bit of research, Deputy Bear helped me out with that today, was Mike Grassley from the Cameron Park Community Services District. That was our representative on this committee of everybody here in the county. So we don't have any other connection to that, so I wasn't able to reach out to get any additional information, but that was our representative on this committee. By early 2024, they held their second planning session. The session focused on sharing the results, the findings from the risk assessment, which summarized all the key vulnerabilities to the community and the objectives to the plan. The plan and public involvement, they involved the public in two key stages of the planning process during the drafting of the plan itself and then again prior to adoption. Risk assessment.
Sorry, this is fully manual
right
today.
This was a little bit tough to read, I know, but as you can see on the screen, it talks about all the hazards on the far left there, and clearly we have a majority of those hazards. Some are different levels, but wildfires, obviously that's a threat to us. You know, it does say, I think it said tornadoes on there. We don't get tornadoes very often, but we do get some pretty significant winds that come through that cause some damage. And that might be in the way of trees falling, lines down, sparking fires, those kinds of things. And so those are the types of issues. One specific to Cameron Park we can point out is the potential for dam failure. We do have a dam as part of the Cameron Park Lake. And so that's very important for us to make sure that we maintain that dam. We're doing some preventative work out there. We're getting it inspected annually. Those are the types of things that we need to do proactively. But we can also look at that and look at the inundation maps, where the water is going to go, who would be inundated, all of that is really part of that assessment. So as you look at the risk assessment, you can see the different categories and, you know, where they're at. And, yeah, some of those are going to be pretty high for us. Wildfire is going to be high for us. The potential of flooding, clearly that's going to be high for us, just given we sit in a little bit of a bowl here, and we have had some significant flooding events here. So that's the risk assessment, and that drives to the next, which is the mitigation strategy. So your mitigation strategy is really the action-oriented part of the plan. It sets out the goals, the objectives, and the specific actions the CSD will take to reduce risk. Some of those we're kind of inherently already doing, but there's other things that we can do as well, and we can talk more to that. The goals are guidelines that explain what the community wants to achieve. The mitigation actions are specific projects that help achieve these goals. You know, one of the things I think that we do a really good job with our partners, CAL FIRE, is we do a lot of defensible space or vegetation mitigation out there. So the CAL FIRE with the hand crews are really good at helping us do that. Those are things that we should probably look at other projects that we consider to be a threat to the community as part of this, and we can, you know, reduce those. So. All right, so there's 15 mitigation actions that align with FEMA's 6 mitigation project types: prevention, property reduction, natural resource protection, structural projects, public information, and emergency services. These are also referred to as these types of categories. They're the 4 A's. How can they alter a hazard, avert a hazard, or involve adaptation? Adaptation, I can't talk tonight. To the hazard, and lastly, how can we avoid the hazard completely? Next one is the actual adoption and implementation. So the final phase of the planning process is the plan adoption. That commonly occurs, with Cal OES and FEMA. They reviewed the plan. They've issued the approval pending the adoption status. It sounds like, Deputy Baer, I'll look to you. It sounds like we are one of the last ones adopting the annex. Is that correct?
Correct. You're the last one.
We're the last one. Potentially adopting it. So with that, I will stop. I'll ask if there's any specific questions, and Deputy Baer, if I missed anything or you can fill anything in, please do.
I've got a huge update on the part to approve this. If you can access to mitigate some grant money, which is a huge piggy bank, so you can to mitigate your disasters that are outlining this or the hazards. And plus, for you guys, it's very cheap because we already paid for it. So the financial cost for it is nice because if you went on your own to do this, you consult it, to do all the public outreach meetings, all the planning, all the stuff that went into it, is very expensive. So if you guys are the last ones to adopt this. Other jurisdictions were very upset they weren't included into this because we can only have so many partners because of the cost of the project. But we were really excited when Karen Park said that they were willing to be a part of this. And I've been living here, this area my whole life. And there's definitely some places where we could do some mitigation. This gives us the ability to better afford it.
Thank you. And I don't know if Melinda or Leanna have anything to add.
Okay. I'll bring it back to Madam Chair.
Questions from the board?
I didn't see anything about a man-made hazards like a tanker truck burning up or exploding on 50, because we have 50 going through our community. They all seem to go in natural. Do you, are there situations for a bomb threat or I mean, more man-made problems?
Yeah, we know those threats exist. It's just that that's not part of communication for this. It's more of a disaster. The man-made side, not.
Are they included somewhere?
Not for this. It's more like wildfires, flooding, stuff that is more natural than man-made.
Investigations and like potential actions, that's absolutely an option. But it's not covered under the grant programs that were mentioned earlier, like GRIP or the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. So we did not include them in this update, but that is something we can look into in the update in 5 years.
So could you go over the mitigations that have been proposed in this plan and what are our obligations?
I'll defer to the on that. I don't have the front of me. There are multiple projects that the community put forward, a lot of them deal with flooding, fire, things of that nature. Those are the main ones.
Okay. So, by adopting this plan, are we committing to doing these things?
No, we just give you the option to mitigate those, to be a part of it.
Okay.
We at the county, we have a whole list of mitigation projects we would love to do.
Right.
But some of them may not realistically be able to get done that time.
Okay.
We're just identifying those, saying these are the issues that we want to get fixed. And if we're able to do it, then if it's in there, we can show to our mitigation plan that this is something that we're trying to go for.
And
gotcha.
Get the funding to be able to do this.
Yes, absolutely.
Just building off that a little bit, we like to consider this like a wish list of potential projects. By adopting them, it doesn't involve any financial commitment. If you get funding through one of these grant programs, there might be a match, like a 25% local match to 75% state or federal. But, yeah,
really on. Okay. Thank you.
Questions? So we're not obligated to...
Can you all hear me?
Yes, we
can. Yes, we can hear you fine. I was also wondering what our obligations were, but I read somewhere in there that we were... potentially not eligible to get FEMA fund in a disaster if we did not adopt this. Is that accurate?
I will reiterate with Melissa and the state and FEMA only require people to get natural hazards. And you should actually in the plan. And again, if those hazards that have been profiled in your plan. And so we're supposed to come up with a range of those different actions per hazard.
If we did, if we did decide to take an action, these are things that grant money is available for?
Yes, there are, yes.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Questions from the public? Yes.
Forensic Bowling Camera Report. My recollection was the previous general manager brought an issue forward that the mitigation plan made a statement that Lime Rock and Marble Valley would significantly impact this district. I don't know how it falls into hazard, but there was an effect. Is this the same report that he was referring to?
I don't recall his statements. I can answer that.
He called it the county's hazardous mitigation report. So I can't seem to find anything in there.
I've not seen that statement in there. I can tell you that, that clearly any development reduces fire risk. As it sits naturally, that is an impact potentially to all the communities because of all the just the natural vegetation that's out there. But the development actually, in a lot of cases, reduces the risk because the vegetation goes away. But there is also the human element you're adding more. I've not seen that statement specifically.
Well, it was more that they would affect our pools and recreational and have a
different report.
Different report.
Different
okay.
Report.
All right. Yeah. Too many mitigation reports.
I get it now. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Yes.
I just have a question about the flooding that happened January 1st to 31st of 2023. And so is this is to mitigate that?
Yes, it could. It could mitigate.
Okay. Have there been plans already put forward for the lake itself?
No, I wouldn't say it plans necessarily. It's clearly identified as a risk for dam failure. But yeah,
I'm asking because my husband designed a plan, and he's not here right now. But anyway, so in case you're interested, he shared it with somebody at the time that was on some agency that he was hiring, but he was going to Washington, and they met, and he got this plan.
thanks for, you know how to get a hold of me. We'll get in contact.
Yeah, I would say that does give you the ability to get mitigation money to fix problems like
okay,
that.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public questions about the emergency mitigation plan? Okay. Seeing no more public comment, bringing it back to the board. Is there any discussion about what we want to do with this?
I'm going to just require a motion to approve.
Yes.
Seeing no further discussion, I move that we approve resolution number 2025-07, adopting the 2024 El Dorado County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan, including Annex B specific to Canyon Park Community Service District.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Do we need a roll call?
We do. It's resolution number.
Okay, can you please call the roll?
Director Scobie?
Aye.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Director Bazette?
Aye.
Director Israel?
Aye.
And Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay, and we are doing item... Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deputy Bear. I do want to point out that Deputy Bear is responsible for like 500 of the pages in this. Oh, I'm sorry. I just kidding. Just kidding.
Hello, everywhere I go.
Thank you. For my Sunday afternoon. Okay. Moving to item 14, presentation of the proposal.
This is also number 16.
We moved it in front of 15.
Oh, correct. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get that up there in 2 seconds here, Chris. Yep. Katie's really sitting by that tree.
Great, thank you. Good evening, board. I've met most of you, but as a formality and a reminder, my name is Chris. I'm the district manager for El Dorado Disposal, accompanied by some of my peers over here to my right. And for Director Gilchrist, aloha, and quite the place to do a virtual meeting. So I thought we would kick it off today with just kind of a snapshot of Cameron Park CSD and their customer activity. So you'll notice up here, predominantly Cameron Park's a residential community. Obviously, you guys are familiar with that. Just under 6,000 customers, residential customers in Cameron Park, and then slightly over 200 in the commercial category. A couple of things of note here on the customer activity. I think it's really important to identify and notice that the 1383, SB 1383, which is California's ordinance bill, and really targeted towards commercial activity, also residentially, and redistributing the food waste material into the organics or yard waste container. 99.5% compliance, so only one commercial business in Cameron Park is currently non-compliant in that realm. We actively work through those things and do outreach and meet with those customers and work with staff too to notify them of the folks that aren't. But that really is a big win. This has been a heavy lift from our outreach team, but also in partnership with staff in notifying, identifying, and doing a lot of groundwork to go out to customers and educate them on kind of what is going to get them to the finish line here. A couple of service notes for you. So in 2024, we did roughly 308,000 services in Cameron Park, so 308,000 times we picked up the trash. That number doesn't include the recycling, green waste, so that's just the trash services there. Slightly over 19,000 times, we were able to service extra material for customers that had left some extra material out of the curb or placed some extra material in their can. We were able to take that for them. As a convenience to them, and those folks didn't have to call in and request that or what have you. And then at the bottom there, you'll see the buyback center data. I think the Cameron Park buyback center is really an asset to the community. You'll see that there was over close to 31,000 transactions for CRB redemption in the community. and $346,000 were put back into the community via CRV redemption. The community, Cameron Park Community Center also hosts e-waste disposal, so they don't have to go all the way up to the transfer station if they don't like. They can take their electronic waste to the Cameron Park 5X Center located over there by the new brewery, and we also facilitate extra yard waste disposal there free of charge as well. So on the community engagement front, community outreach and participation is really an extremely important aspect of our business and being part of the community. You know, yes, we are a service provider, but ultimately we view ourselves as a community partner. When we can get out into the community and collaborate alongside staff or collaborate, whether we're doing at a booth or we're at an event, you can break down a lot of confusion when you simply have a one-on-one conversation with somebody, or you get to hand them material person to person and kind of review it together. You know, two highly successful community cleanup events that were hosted in partnership with staff and Clarissa and her team. So really successful events. The community is allowed to come and use those events to dispose of stuff for free. We do one in the spring, one in the fall, and it's been a lift, I know, from the CSD to get volunteers and kind of do that stuff, and I credit the staff and their team for being able to partner with us to ultimately provide that to the community as a service. And then you'll notice there's some route audit information here. So route audits and kind of field audits are a part of compliance under CalRecycle's SB 1383 bill as well. So although it's a requirement, we see route audits as an opportunity for further education. A lot of times when we're out in the field and we're looking at material, we can identify trends and it helps us understand where are people still confused, and then we can communicate to customers that way and really help continue to drive and clear up some of that confusion. So, of course, how does this impact the good residents of Cameron Park? The annual adjustment this year is 2.66%. I think it's important to understand that in order to earn that adjustment, there's a series of performance criteria that El Dorado Disposal has to meet. In that performance criteria, there's different metrics, but it's tied to residential and commercial outreach. Part of it's tied to community event outreach and participation. Part of it's tied to call answer metrics. So when you guys call in, how long are you sitting on the phone? How quickly are we getting your responses? And then there's a couple of other metrics in there. But it's on a point scale. So for this year, we earned 105 out of 100 possible points. So community event outreach and participation takes us over that 100 mark. Where we're eligible to earn more points if we participate more at events and different things like that. And so that's where we landed this year. So on the direct impact to the ratepayer, you'll see that the most common container for the Cameron Park residents is that 65-gallon cart. Just under 3,000 folks use the 65-gallon container. So on a monthly bill, we'll see about a $1.10 increase. I would also add that it's always been a priority of ours and an intention of ours to try to keep that senior rate a manageable figure, and we're going to continue to prioritize that going forward. And then lastly, just understanding what's included in this rate, I also feel is important. So every Cameron Park resident gets 4 vouchers for various free disposal. They're curbside, you know, so you don't have to, you just put it out, give us a call, put it out your curb, we'll come get it. There's the option to have one extra container for either organics or recycle. You can swap them out during the year. So if you wanted an extra yard waste can while you're doing your gardening season, sure, and then you want to get an extra recycle container during the holiday season, we can do that for you. And then obviously the two twice-a-year community cleanup events that are free to Cameron Park residents in partnership with the CSD. In 2024, I think I just wanted to share with you guys some of the accomplishments that we had. I mean, I would say we're proud of them. for numerous reasons, but the highlights really here are we were able to reestablish textile collection in July of 24 last year. So we have these green textile collection bins you see here at all three of our redemption centers, one in Eldorado Hills, one in Cameron Park, one in Placerville, and then we also have two of them located at our transfer station as well. You know, we often see textiles, clothes, shoes, so on and so forth end up in the landfill or end up in the trash. So we really saw an opportunity here to get that material out of the trash and recycled via, you know, proper textile recycling. So from July to December last year, at just the Cameron Park Buyback Center, over 1,000 pounds of textiles were diverted from the trash waste stream. So that was a big win. Completion of our MRF renovation, that was a long project for some of you that have been around long enough to know when that established. Really a great win for all, a win for the community, but also a win for Eldorado Disposal, for folks like Jeff that have seen this process from start to finish. You know, really, we enhanced the free recycling area at the transfer station, so you can come in and get rid of all sorts of different stuff for free, whether that's a mattress or your electronic waste, clothes, if you're just bringing in a bunch of excess cardboard, various different options for free recycling there. Improved traffic flow was a really big point of attention for us, and it's been a great success. We've been able to cut down wait times quite a bit, which has impacted the community. And then I would say just overall, near and dear to our heart, is that the whole facility is just in a much safer place. If you come there during the week, right, our containers, our staff, trucks are completely segregated from the public, so you eliminate safety hazards there. You're no longer backing up to a wall that then drops off a level, so just a really clean, nice flow to the facility. And if you haven't been there, please come check it out or take a peek. And then just at the end there, some really good efforts to enhance our compost program. So in total, between the county and the city of Placerville, you know, we were able to bring 586 tons of compost, organic compost, back into the community and provide it to customers last year. We also updated our battery recovery process. So we used to give out those kind of plastic containers. We found that opening is not always the best, and we can't fit some of those larger things in there. So we moved to a battery bag system, which is basically an enlarged Ziploc. You can fit full-size tablet or a power tool battery in there. You know, last year I think we totaled that 8 or 9 truck fires, so that was a really big point of emphasis for us, and we've seen really good early returns in that matter. So, looking forward to 2025, obviously, we are already well underway into this year. But a few of the things that we're really going to continue to drive this year and focus on. We're exploring the opportunity to bring organic compost already bagged back into the community and be able to provide that. Obviously, not everybody has the ability to take their pickup and go load up compost, so we're exploring the opportunity to be able to provide bags just directly to customers in smaller quantities. And then additionally, I would say, you know, we've expanded our compost operation so we can now kind of break it down and put it into roll-off, so we could bring in 7 tons or 5 tons of it. So if there's folks in Cameron Park that want to explore having a large drop of compost in their yard or at their 5-acre property or something, we're actively seeking those folks out and looking to provide them with some free compost. Our new education center, which you see a snapshot of here, which was part of the MRF renovation, really is rearing and ready for action. So we're excited to be able to welcome all different school groups, different I would say groups across the county, not just schools, but really various types of groups that want to come and kind of take a peek behind the curtain and understand what happens, you know, when you roll a can out and then everything goes away, what happens next. This gives us the opportunity to do that, so to educate some schools and do field trips, but also give various groups the opportunity to kind of take a closer look at our facility and what happens in the background. And then You know, I would say as we continue to go, and especially in the state of California, we recognize that, you know, material types and policies and rules and things are constantly changing. And as they change, we understand we have to be creative and make changes ourselves. And so just really kicking up our outreach efforts and getting creative on how we reach the public. You know, not everybody does it through paper, but not everybody does it through social media. So just really trying to find every avenue we can to continue to drive good behavior, clean up bad habits, and provide useful tips. So thank you for your time this afternoon, and happy to field questions and answer inquiries.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah. Do you think that we could arrange a field trip for any Cameron Park residents who would like to go?
I'm happy to do so. Yeah, okay. I would think if we could get some form of group rather than various.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of one time.
But
yeah.
I think we could probably facilitate.
Happy
okay.
to.
Yeah, because yeah. I've seen like the wastewater treatment plant. They'll let you come in.
Yeah.
And you can join them for residents, so forth. So I think it'd be a great opportunity for our residents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not bashful. We love to show off. Going on up there, so.
And I saw the textile box over at the buyback center, and I'm just curious, where do those go? What do you do with the textiles?
Sure. So the textiles, we contract with a company called TechStream. They recover the textiles, and I believe they process part of them, or they redistribute them to third world countries. Mm. So
interesting.
Do you take other products such as draperies, any type of textiles, or has to be included? Shoes.
You know, great question, Monique. And it's kind of tricky, right? Because once you open the floodgates, right, then people start putting anything and everything. I think the company prefers things that are relatively clean. I can find out from our vendor. I know we focused on the clothes, the shoes, blankets, things like that. But curtains, draperies, I can reach out and get an answer for you.
They'll fill up your bin pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm sure. And other things.
Okay, those are my questions.
Questions over here.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, first of all, I really appreciate your e-waste batteries and all that. It used to be we had to pick them up at Classical, so it's nice that we can do that locally. And also that the truck fire with the lithium batteries, because we're getting more and more mm-hmm. big batteries here. My understanding, the little batteries you have that tape the each end, is that correct?
Yeah, that is preferred method. Okay. Now, I would say if we go to pick up the batteries on the curb and we notice that some aren't taped, we're going to take them, because if we don't, we understand that they probably end up in the trash, right? But if you get a bunch that are not taped, you know, the ends rub and they arc, and that can be a concern. So the preference and the ask is that we tape the ends so that they don't, you know, arc. But again, if you got 15 batteries in there and you tape 13, we appreciate the effort and we'll handle it from there.
And what about the larger batteries for tools or all these toys that people are driving around with?
Yeah, please put them in. I don't believe those ones have to be taped, because I don't think you can.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, really, it's lithium batteries are the ones that really pose the fire risk. Mm. And our buyback center attendants, when they receive batteries in the bags or not, identify if they're lithium and then tape before they package and send them out to get them outbound.
But it's a good point, Sid, because that was the reason for moving to a larger opening. We want you to put your Milwaukee battery, mm-hmm. your tablet, or whatever in there versus in the trash.
Okay, I guess we all need a lot more education on that. What does that mean?
Sure.
But we're getting so many more batteries out there, and so we don't want to have fires in our trucks. The senior rate, what is the age in which you determine a senior? Is that 60 or 65?
65.
Yeah, I don't know, because a lot of people that 60 is, I get that question all. Is how come I don't get it at 60? But I don't know, somebody made that decision, but maybe that's worth reviewing. I really compliment your seasonal pickup, the one over at the middle school. I made two trips myself, but my Rotary Club recycled bicycles, and I think Scout Troop got a lot of American flags. So
And it was a lot of community involvement. It's a really a win-win situation. Yeah. And I think much appreciated. It's great.
Thank
public
you.
Relations. Now, two questions on, and I'll follow up on the question that other gentleman asked. I have a renter who does not pay their bill on time. And, of course, I get called about it frequently, and I can't call back because your call center doesn't seem to be able to, you're on overload. It would sure be nice if you had an automated call center. You could just call and leave a message. And I know it's not on me because I pay by credit card, but it's how do you respond, and it's frustrating. I do understand why you need mandatory garbage pickup and why it has to come to the owner, because we have garbage all over our community. But I think you raised an interesting question. If my house is vacant, or I'm putting up the table, whatever, is there a way to suspend garbage service? Do we have that possibility?
So I will say we operate under the ordinance adopted by the
right.
CSD. That's not an option under the current ordinance. But if that was something the CSD wanted to have a conversation about, you know, we're happy to have that conversation. But under the existing ordinance, which we operate under via the CSD, suspending or temporary suspending services is not currently an option for Cameron Park.
So I recently got an email message about leaving your cans out prior more than 12 hours, and it's a county ordinance, and I had conversations with a few people, and I know I'm one of the guilty ones because my pickup is early Monday morning. If I'm not gone, I've gone that week, and they probably go out Friday. Are you enforcing this? Is this something new? I don't think it's a good PR thing to. I mean, if it's out there, and maybe just the county, but can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. The county ordinance requires that all containers are basically pulled back from your service location 12 hours after pickup.
Right.
I can say that we do not, Elder Rod Disposal does not actively police that ordinance.
Okay.
A lot of times we are notified by constituents or other residents that call in and say, here's the situation. And so our response to that is, we will notify the resident, the customer, of the county ordinance, and then if it's still out, there's a secondary process where basically if you were to leave it out there for 5 days or so, the county asks us to go, you know, drop a paper ordinance basically on the container that says here's the ordinance. So
it's kind of a courtesy notice, what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay. I think that's the right
yep.
way to go. So then I had requested a year ago, we looked at the overage thing, and I just discovered that you now are emailing and calling people as a warning that you violated that or whatever that is. So that's nice. The second part I'd ask for is there, and it isn't the quarterly report because I didn't see that, I get a chance to read that. Are you now reporting how often that happens?
That's not in the performance standards that are currently
yeah.
written into the contract. That's something that you guys requested or wanted that to be part of the performance criteria. We can, you know, have a conversation about that. But that's not currently in the performance
okay.
criteria.
And then the second one is the contamination.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at some sort of a metric. How often is that happening? And what is you have a process of warning? And I know you have video cameras, I guess, in the truck. So is it a random thing that you do, or are you going to enforce that consistently, or what is the status of that?
Sure. So as of today, we have never charged or applied a contamination fee.
Yes.
You know, I'll tell you, Sid, a lot of that was based on our conversation last year, and frankly, as partners, we sensed that there was some uneasiness with that, and
yeah.
so we didn't want to just move forward with that. I'll tell you, it's something that we really need to address as a community. You know, the recycled waste stream is probably 60-40, 60% recycle, 40% trash. And we do every possible effort to continue to educate and clear up that behavior. So really for the past, year, we've continued to just do that. We have the Oops Tag program, which is really a curbside program rooted in education. So we'll hang the tag, we'll identify what item was incorrect, and then typically that generates a call from customer service, and they'll call and say, you know, hi Chris, we noticed that you had this material in your container today. please don't have that in there, and it's an educational conversation. So year to date, we have not assessed anybody at contamination.
So it would be helpful for us, I think, as a board to know that, and also as educating our constituents. I mean, we're supportive of that, but
sure.
I think those are metrics that are valuable, both the contamination and the overage and how often it happens. And I really appreciate notifying people that this, you know, you're violating some policy here and whatever. So, okay. Well, thank you for that. So hopefully we can see that, maybe that change in the agreement.
Yeah, so if there is going to be revisions to the agreement, to the existing contract or something like that, right, that's something that we can work through staff with, work through the board on what you guys would like to see. But amending the franchise agreement or the agreement, that's kind of a separate conversation, but always open to having those conversations.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, tell us more about the compost procurement. Have we actually done anything here in Cameron Park? I'm not aware of a pile here that we can go grab. So tell us more about that.
Sure, yeah. So as part of California's SB 1383, they have very lofty goals for procurement, which is essentially a full circle loop. Quick backstory, the green waste we send out, California expects it to basically go to a composting facility and return to the community. We've successfully created a community location in Placerville where residents can come during operating hours at our buyback center, load up their own container. To answer your question, Tim, no, we have not established a community site in Cameron Park. Would love to do that, have every capability to do that, really would need to work with you, with the board and with staff to identify where we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I can share with you that yesterday we took about 7 tons of material over to the church right here that borders 50.
Mm-hmm.
They asked for some compost, and so we gave them some free compost. How they choose to use it, mm-hmm. if they want to let people come in and get it, it's kind of up to them. But in short, Cameron Park has not established a community location for free compost. We're itching and ready to go and willing to help you guys establish that if we can.
I'd love to see that. I'm always buying compost.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Also, the bag idea I loved. Do you have any idea what the cost might be? Or
so if there's a cost, I don't want to say there will be. I don't want to say what there won't be. There wouldn't be a cost for the compost. Essentially, it would be the cost to bag the material. Nominal, probably $3 range or something like that. And likely, how we can distribute that. We'd again have to work with you guys, but possibly at the buyback center in Cameron Park, we palletize it. Folks can come in and grab a couple bags and something of that nature.
That would be great PR value for our community. Yeah.
What's your annual revenue from our contract?
Annual, were you guys not presented? Were they not given that information for 2024?
I don't think so. Well, I'm asking a question.
Okay. Annual revenue from the Cameron Park hauling, basically 5.5.
5.5, and then we get 5% on that, right?
You, the CSD, via the franchise agreement, we pay franchise fees to be the franchise hauler for mm-hmm. the CSD. 5% of cash receipts, so the money that we actually receive.
Okay, so how do you calculate that? I'm curious. I know I asked for a breakdown when we met on where the revenues came from.
Sure.
Did that come in that email?
I've shared that information with them.
That email. Okay. So how do you calculate it if you just want to run?
So, sure. Total up all the different revenue lines, split uh-huh. between commercial, roll-off, residential,
uh-huh.
land on the total revenue number, uh-huh. 5% of payments received on that revenue number.
And do we have the ability to audit that?
I mean, yeah, I guess we can work with you if there's a need to audit that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious if we do or not, because basically we get a number from EDD that says, our revenue is this much, and here's 5%. That's it. There's no breakdown. And I'm not saying that's not what we want. I'm just asking the question.
Sure. And, you know, we've got a financial consultant that we can work with to do that, and we'll work with the EE team to.
Yeah, I'm not saying I want an audit. I'm just saying, can we?
There's nothing in the agreement that I know that precludes us from doing that, no.
All right, those are my questions.
Okay, taking it out to the public. Any questions from the proposal about the presentation?
Director Gilchrist.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, Director Gilchrist, do you have questions?
I have a member of the public in the room with me who has a comment. So,
okay.
Is my husband called?
Hello. Hey, Christopher. I would just like to offer and understand how the Greater Cameron Park Fire Safe Council could collaborate with you relative to the green waste activities that we're planning. We've got dumpster days on the schedule to where we'll have green waste, where we'll be providing clearance for members of the community, and how that would translate into delivery of that material that otherwise would be a higher fire risk because it's standing, but if we get rid of it, obviously it's not a fire risk. So if you could elaborate on that, I would appreciate it.
Sure, yeah. I can thank you for the comment. I can speak to how we partner with fire safe councils. We partner with various fire safe councils across the county, and frankly, we'd be happy to do so with you, Mr. Gilchrist. We provide a 20% discount for fire safe councils that want to use dumpsters for fire mitigation or community cleanup or things of that nature. Structurally, the way those have worked so far is typically you have someone like yourself who represents a fire safe council. You would collaborate with the community group and kind of pick we'll call it a fire mitigation day. You guys work with us to establish a location, and we can provide you a dumpster with a 20% discount that the community can use for that. On the back end of that, that's kind of a more elaborate process, I think, that we could talk through. But if the Fire Safe Council was interested in doing mitigation and then receiving compost or something of that nature, we're happy to get creative there and explore kind of what you're thinking. Hopefully that helps answer your question.
It does. So I'll reach out, give you a phone call, and thank you, Mahalo. I appreciate your feedback. Thanks.
Yeah. Enjoy Kona.
Okay, other members of the public, yes.
Brad McMullen, Cameron Park. I just wanted to say, your customer service people, when I make a phone call, are phenomenal. Every conversation I've had in the last 7 years has been positive. They knew what they were talking about. They got to the issue, and the call ended. And I felt like I just had a good experience. So thank you for whatever you do to hire good customer service people.
Thank
Kudos.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, since, okay.
Sir, we appreciate that. We take great pride in having a local call center that's not somewhere out in the nether regions.
Or that I can understand. Sorry.
And the gal directly behind you is the office manager responsible for the customer service.
Needs a pay raise.
I agree. It doesn't affect rates.
So thank you. Anybody else in the public? Yes.
Hi, thank you, Jacob Skinnerberg. Is some of your materials, and I frankly don't remember which, I've read a bunch of rates and so forth. I think it is you mentioned that the cost of recycling the materials and basically getting rid of the recycled materials has gone up. And I was wondering why, and also what impact is that having on your overall budget and rates that might be charged to people like us?
Sure, great question.
Want to go first?
Eric?
We have a controller here, so he might be the best.
One of the primary drivers of the of our expense increase is the trucking expense. As you know, trucking wages go up, as fuel goes up, as you know, fixing trucks and the cost of trucks all goes up, or the long haul trucks, right? Because they're all being shipped out in bulk to a processing facility.
Where does it go?
Right now, we send most of it to a facility that's in Ukiah.
Okay.
And where they pick through it all, and that's primarily what drives that rate up.
Yeah.
And it's like the only impact it would have on your rates, because of the rate structure is solidified by the contract, and we can only go up and down, is if fuel spikes up significantly, that would have an impact on it. Otherwise, it's just CPI that you guys get.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I would add too, you know, as we've changed how we recycle, the less stuff is recycling, which is kind of ironic. And so the process of actually taking the good stuff and making something out of it has gotten essentially more difficult. So the actual processing of recycle has changed.
Residuals spiked up.
Right.
In 2017 at the China Store.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Thank you. Other questions from the public comments? Okay. Bringing it back, there's no action, right? There's
question.
Yes.
So I want to be sure. So a truck takes green waste to Ukiah. Do you bring a compost back in that same truck?
So currently we do actually a swap. So we meet a truck at Potrero. So we're not hauling Potrero Hills Landfill, just outside of Fairfield. And I would say wrong with Citizen City or something like that. We meet another truck. We give them our green waste. They take the green waste. We bring back compost. They bring us a trailer full of compost.
So it's a trailer swap.
Correct. We're not.
I was just wondering, someone unloading the garbage truck. Okay, I didn't understand. Okay, thank you.
Shovel by shovel.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just a presentation.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your presentation. If there's nothing else, we will move on to item number 16, the first reading of Ordinance number 2025-06.18, SB 1383 ordinance.
Yes, and so we did take this to the Budget and Admin Committee, and so the staff report is there. I'll briefly go over the staff report. So in 2007, the district's board of directors approved ordinance 2007-01. That established a mandatory garbage service, providing rules and regulations governing the collection, handling, disposal of solid waste, and other operational regulations. In December 2007, the board repealed ordinance 2007-01, the adoption of ordinance 2007-02, which in addition to the existing mandatory solid waste collection services incorporated the present and future boundaries of the district and added a new set of ordinance definitions. As well as the lien hearing process. 2016, Senate Bill 1383 went into effect as part of the short-lived Climate Pollutant Reduction Act of 2016. And so that really set policy and goals for reducing methane gas emissions at landfills by 75% and recovering at least 25% of edible food for human consumption by 2025. To achieve this goal, Senate Bill 1383 required CalRecycle to develop regulations to reduce organic waste in landfills. This new regulation requires the district to adopt an ordinance similar to enforceable mechanism, similarly an enforcement mechanism to implement relevant portions of SB 1383, including sections mandating subscriptions to organic waste collection for single-family, multifamily, and commercial areas. The procedure to adopt the ordinance requires a series of public hearings. This is just, this is that. Notice in culminating in the adoption by the board in a public meeting. So there's several attachments to this here.
And this is the first reading of this ordinance.
Okay.
And if you want, do you want to read the ordinance, or we
want to waive the reading?
Yes, I would recommend we waive them. Do we need to make a motion to that effect?
Well, I think we need to talk about it and take it out to public
okay.
first. But so, were there any questions?
Yeah, I have questions. I guess my first question is, I'm confused by what we're amending or what we're adding to. And at the title of the new ordinance says it's amending and revising ordinance 2007-01, not 02, and ordinance 2008-220. Which I haven't seen. I'm not sure what that is. But the ordinance, the new ordinance, goes on to basically be a completely separate ordinance. It's not actually amending anything. It's adding to. So I guess, am I correct in saying that the concept here is that we would actually have two separate ordinances, 2007-02 and this one. Is that correct?
No. So my understanding, this is replacing that one, and I'll look to our partners out there on that.
I would have to see what that ordinance is, Mo, but I will say that, I can speak for, I guess, the expectation of CalRecycle for SB 1383 compliance, for the district to be compliant. It's required that they establish an ordinance for essentially organic material disposal. What I can tell you is, from an operational standpoint, the CSD has been compliant since 2022 when we implemented the service. There just was never an ordinance established by the CSD. So from a service standpoint, you guys are compliant, but CalRecycle is going to require that there's an official ordinance adopted by the CSD.
So we're playing catch up to that. With respect to your other point, I think that was simply dots that were put in there as opposed to 2008-02. So that looks like that might be a typo on that. But I'll double check for you.
If that's the case, then it appears to me that there are some clauses in the initial ordinance that didn't make it into the next.
Unless you have something that's specific.
Well, I could go into a lot of specifics on this. I don't want to waste our time tonight.
So this is a reading. So if there's something that you have specifically, we'd be more than happy to take that, give that to us in writing. It looks like you have a bunch there, and we can certainly address all those.
Well, I'll just go through. It's not very clear who's responsible for what in the regular inspections. So, generally speaking, who's responsible for what? There's a lot of inspections actually required. There's route reviews and inspections. I don't think this clearly identifies who's that does that, or in general, I'm not clear on who's responsible for what. So, I'm curious who's responsible for what things in this regulation, and that would be CSD, the county, EDD. So, there's no collection area map attached to this. So, I think it refers to it. In Section A, there's some language in there that says, we'll use our contracted hauler or through the use of other haulers. And I thought this was an exclusive franchise with EDD. That language suggests that we could hire other people too, which seems contrary to what we want.
in our ordinance.
Section 7B1 refers to the Director of Public Works. Section 7B4, it refers, the ordinance refers to our agreement with EDD. We shouldn't be doing that. We need to refer to the regulations for the requirements, not a contract with a vendor. We don't describe who's authorized representatives and how they're used in the ordinance at all. We just say we can have one, but what for? There's no discussion regarding charging extra fees or notification regarding those fees or services, as EDD would call them. So for contamination and overfill, what are the requirements? I know the state requires you to contact, if there's contamination and notify those people. So there needs to be a record of that, and it needs to be added to our operating record. Do we use the lien process described in either of these ordinances? But it's in there. I don't know. Does anybody know?
I've never been notified that we have used it for that. We can ask.
I'm not sure why we have it. What is the
hall? Because you haven't used it, does it mean that you won't in the future? So it might.
Well, but I think that maybe Waste Connection has other ways of collecting debt. I'm not sure. I mean, how do you guys collect on late bills?
We don't typically lien properties, do we?
So Cameron Park in the past used to, we would refer the information over to the CSD, and liens were established mm-hmm. on properties.
Via the CSD.
At some point, I don't believe in the last 10 years, that's not happened for whatever reason. And so we use an outside collection agency that we refer accounts to. So it goes through a credit and collections process for helping people pay their bills. But I can tell you that the lien process is, successful in other areas. So.
Okay. And then my final question is, what's the hauler's role with regards to Section 2 of 12 of the amendment, which is, again, has to do with inspections and what authority do they have to enter, say, customers' property, that sort of thing. So those are my concerns. Obviously, we want each, well, again, I won't get into commentary until later. Those are my questions.
Okay, so we have those, and, this being part of the first reading, staff will take that into consideration. We'll work with that EDD on what that looks like. As part of this ordinance, is this similar to other ordinances that you put in place here in the county?
Yeah, very similar. Eldorado Hills established a very similar ordinance. Eldorado County Unincorporated has an ordinance, as does the city of Fosterville for SB 1383.
Yes.
So the only question I had was the complaint procedure goes to the general manager. And yet it sounds like you folks are handling the complaints. So does it ultimately fall on the general manager? Or is there an appeal process? I'm not understanding that, because it clearly is delineates the general manager's responsible party.
Yeah, I think it likely does, because it's our responsibility and we have a third-party company that's actually doing the work. So much like anything we do with the fire department or anybody else, if it's our responsibility, a lot of it does come to us. Now, people know that it's Eldorado Disposal picking up their trash. So likely the majority of those complaints, because we have not received any here, are going directly to EDD.
But I wonder if the public even knows that they have that right to complain to the general manager.
I'm betting that most of them don't.
No, I'm sure.
So I can speak at least from the SB 1383 ordinance standpoint. The complaints are really in this ordinance, the complaints are specific to lack of doing the program, essentially. So if you owned a business and you said, hey, I'm next to In-N-Out and they're just throwing all their food waste in the trash, you as the business owner could file a complaint with the general manager to say In-N-Out is not complying with the ordinance that we have established.
Okay.
So these what's written into this ordinance is really a complaint specific to SB 1383, not general complaints.
Okay, and maybe the language should better reflect that, or maybe I missed it. Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Questions? Nope. I think Tim covered it all. I mean, there are some title issues, and it'd be nice to have it clearly stated what is our old ordinance, what is our new ordinance, just kind of clean it up.
Okay, taking it out to the public. Any public comments regarding SB 1383? Okay, seeing none, bringing it back to the board. So do we need any kind of a motion on the first reading? Or
I think staff has direction with respect to questions. There's no vote at this point on this. And that will be on this agenda.
So are there any further comments?
No.
Moving to item 15, public hearing, approved Fourth Amendment to the agreement between the CSD and Waste Connections.
Miley.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris.
Chris.
This is our contract.
I didn't know if that was a sign or.
Yeah. I think she's probably thinking about Hawaii.
Oh, got you. I see you moved. You moved 15. I got
yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
Okay. So.
We'll open the hearing.
Okay. So. Did you want to have it, or what
happened? Well, I think we open the hearing at first, and then I'm looking at Brian here, so open the hearing. So just simply state that we're opening the hearing.
Okay, we are opening the hearing.
Okay. All right. Let me get to that one. So clarification, it was just a presentation. Now we're having the open public hearing.
Correct. Because there's a presentation, there's
yes.
an ordinance, and now this is the,
okay, thank you,
the public hearing. So, Cameron Park Community Services District entered into a solid waste services agreement with the Waste Connections doing business as El Dorado Disposal Services in 2008. This agreement has been amended three times, 2011, 2012, 2020, to reflect the changes in the level of services, legal mandates, and operational practices. This proposed Fourth Amendment, 2025, is necessary to bring the district into compliance with California Senate Bill 1383 and the short-lived climate pollutants regulation and other recent legislation affecting solid waste and recycling programs. Senate Bill 1383, compliance implementation, that's obviously a big part of that. It established mandatory organic waste collection and processing services for residential, commercial, multifamily customers like discussed earlier. The updated new definitions in Section 1 adds definitions for terms such as organic waste, food waste, and communal single-family units. Revises legacy terms including green waste and references AB 9839 and AB 1826. Exhibit B, the rates and services is replaced in its entirety to reflect the updated service levels and the addition of organic waste collection. Revised reporting, number four here, requirement section 16B increases record retention from 3 years to 5 years, specifies the type of compliance records required, AB 1826 and SB 1383, includes a provision for confidentiality agreements to protect the proprietary and financial data during future rate reviews. That is what we have for you today. So let me open up for discussion.
Okay. So, Director Gilchrist, do you have any questions?
I lost you for about 3 minutes, so no.
Oh, you're on Zoom. This is actually, we went over this in DNA, but it's the Waste Connections
yes.
contract.
Oh, yeah. I did I do not. I got my questions answered in BNA. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim?
Is there language in this amendment that makes it clear that we get a second recycling or green waste cart as part of our service? Is there language anywhere in our agreement that says that?
Yeah, the additional container?
Yeah.
Yep, that's in the original agreement.
Could you, yeah, send us that reference point?
Sure.
I'll go back to, in reading it, it's my interpretation of the language that's in here, that we don't have the ability to audit EDD except at points where there's a rate adjustment. That's not just the routine one, but like we did a couple of years ago. So if we wanted to audit their numbers for 2026, we don't have the contractual ability to do that. Has EDD submitted an annual report for Section 16 of the contract?
Yes, yeah, every year.
Okay. So did we get a copy of it?
I would check the email that we sent. I think we did send that as part of what Chris sent over to us. And there's also a report in there.
All right. Is there a commercial contamination rate in the rate schedule?
So we have a contamination charge in there, Tim. In theory, it aligns under the residential category. We did not separate a contamination fee out under the commercial category rate category as well. If that's something that is important to the board, we can duplicate that charge or determine, you know, how we include that in the commercial.
So it's the same flat fee no matter what their service size is?
So that's how we originally looked at it.
Well, how do you look at it now? What do you charge our customers?
As I told Sid, year-to-date, we have not imposed any contamination fees on Cameron Park residents.
What about commercial is what I'm asking.
Have not imposed any contamination charges on
that. But you do intend to at some point, don't you?
I think we're going to be... We really need to explore that. I don't know that we ever make meaningful impact in cleaning up the material unless we can have some weight behind you know what we're trying to do.
So it would be, again, really helpful to have that information. What is the frequency of that contamination? Yeah.
Well, and obviously the contract is allowing for it the way it's going to be written. So if you're going to utilize it, we would like to know, I guess. Under section, is there a description in this contract for what constitutes an overfilled bin?
In the original agreement, yes.
Okay. How is 5% organics contamination determined? Is it by weight? Is it by volume? How does that happen?
I can tell you that we do waste characterizations as part of SB 1383's requirements.
Mm-hmm.
We can determine a percentage there. But when you look in a 95-gallon container, 5% contamination can be challenging,
right?
To identify,
right?
So.
Well, it's going into our contract language, so I mean we should probably tighten that up somehow. I mean, because right now it's not very enforceable, in my opinion. So we should look at that language and try to tighten it up. There's a statement in there about Northern Recycling. Probably shouldn't be in there. Where you guys take the compost should just be a high volume organics, whatever it is, a facility, just the generic description. And I was wondering, do we have language referring to container color and labeling requirements?
I believe the language in there says that we will comply with state regulations in regarding lid color. I don't think it's specific.
Okay.
I mean, as we know, right, 5 years ago we used yellow lids for recycle and then California.
Well, everything that's going out new, right, has the right colors. Is that correct? And they're all labeled. Is that correct?
An animal label, correct.
Organic product procurement. There's no language in there. Can we get something in there? Obviously, you're offering up services, but what are the boundaries of that? What are the costs? I didn't see anything in here on that. All right, that's my questions.
Nothing further.
Yeah, I find it oftentimes when we receive board reports, we'll have a red line version of our old stuff and then a nice clean version. It would be really useful for us to actually have a searchable document where we have the current contract with all the amendments stitched in, because this, if you try to follow through all the amendments, you get one section, this has been switched out and replaced with this, and then this one switched out and replaced with that. And so when you try to go through and understand where you are at currently, I feel like it's very easy to get lost. So if we could actually have, this is our contract of where we are currently, and just append all the other, you know, the supporting evidence if you want to double check it, and then we'd be able to search it and say, oh, look, here's where this trash charge is, and oh, here's where it says you get one extra cart for free. It would just make our life a little easier to follow through on that. And my other comment is, in the past, you supplied a rate sheet or an additional rate sheet where you said, here's our current fees, here's our proposed new fees, and then gave us the opportunity to say, oh, well, we want to hold the senior rate, or we're not going to hold the senior rate, or we want to. And we'd have some discussion on that, and it's not provided here. So it would be nice to see that comparison again. Here's where we are. I have to go do a 2.66% adjustment to know back out where we were. So that would be useful as well for us to see.
Sure, if that's what staff would appreciate, I would say that, you know, all of our rate sheets are provided annually and should be accessible to consumers via somewhere on the. Oh, I will work with Mo and we'll get you that information.
Look for ways to package it a little bit differently.
I think Jeff in the past has presented those, you know, side by side. Mm-hmm. This was new. Okay. And
we certainly have
a template.
Yeah, look, we can present anything that you guys want as, you know, part of that big package. You know, we've been asked to kind of streamline what we present and those kind of things.
Right.
But we're happy, you know, we'll talk about anything. And with regard to your earlier. With regard to the kind of bulkiness of the contract and the various changes, we've had discussions about streamlining and working through that. We recently went through that process with the city of Placerville, which was to take, you know, that very old agreement that had been amended multiple times over many years and essentially work through it so that it is a lot cleaner and easier to work your way through in a more linear way. And we can certainly do that with
be
staff
awesome.
Here.
That would be really, really appreciated.
Yeah, I would add that that's already in the works.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
We're already in the process of combining the amendments, the original agreement, putting
perfect.
It into one
you.
Package for you guys.
Thank you.
And again, that was kind of a separate thing,
okay.
But we could
those
present that to you hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah, I think the conversation really was there was no way we were going to be able to do that for tonight. That's going to take some time, and that's what we kind of talked about the other day. Working with legal from the organizations for whatever that document's going to look like.
Okay, thank you. So,
I just want one comment. It's much easier for your customers and our constituents to understand, I think, when you show what those rates would look like with the changes. So that visual presentation you used before was very helpful and much more understandable, I think. So it's not just for board members, I think it's for our public as well.
Right. And I got my questions out during DNA, so taking it out to the public. Yes. No, I did already. Yeah, so did we have any public comment about the contract? Okay, well, seeing as I'm not bringing it back to the board, any further comments or what do we want to do?
Personally, I would suggest that we only approve the rate increase this evening and none of the contract language changes. A lot of those contract language changes depend on what's in the final contract, or in the final ordinance, I should say. And so I would suggest that we wait on that contract language and get it right the first time.
Anybody else?
Quick question. So yes, the rate increases as of July 1, is that correct? Is that the contract period? Yeah.
Actually, I do have one. We have a resident here, you know, they're gone half the time. Why are we charging them if they're vacant? And I heard that it's something that we had control over, but I'm not sure if that's accurate and if we would add that to the contract language or we'd add that to the ordinance. And I don't know what other agencies do, because I don't think you should just blatantly and say, oh, somebody calls them, so oh, I'm gone. You know, they need to supply some sort of documentation to show that they're gone, you know, that they have another. I don't know how you would do that, but I think it would be good to look into that, because there are people who are gone for 3 months at a time when they're in the hospital, something like that. So I'm not sure how we handle that, but I could maybe have that looked into, whether it goes in the ordinance or that contract language.
Sure.
You guys can figure it out.
No, so we'll certainly have a conversation. I know the gentleman will reach out to me, and before we have that meeting, you know, we'll meet with EDD, but just points for the board to consider is there's a number of services that we have at our homes that if you're gone for any period of time, you know, can you shut that off? Some of these you can't. Some of these, that's the charge, and others you can't. So I think we need to go into this carefully, do a really good job of researching, and not just say, okay, we're not going to charge or waive that fee for that period of time. That's a choice to be here full-time or not be here full-time. I just think we need to go into that slowly.
That's fine. I'll leave to you guys to work it out.
Gotcha. It'll come back to the board, because the right. board will have to make a decision on whether or not you want to approve that.
Right.
And what does that approval process look like so it's consistent across the board?
Well, you can always turn off your PG&E service, so there are
yeah.
utilities you can turn off.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I got.
Okay, so we have a recommendation. Do we have a motion?
So then we need to close the hearing.
Okay, we are closing the public hearing.
So clarification, point of order. So the first reading is just getting this out, a first public notice.
Well, that was the other.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
This is actual public
hearing. We're on contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
15.
So we have your suggestion was to approve the rate increase, Tim, right?
Right, but not approve
the language in the contract.
Yeah.
So bring the contract back next month.
Or a month after, whenever both the ordinance and the contract language all work together and we've had some time to work.
Don't we have to approve the contract in June or we won't have a contract?
No, we're approving the rate increase now.
It's just the rate increase.
So they would get their money. But we would still work on making sure our contract language and everybody's clear on what they're doing. And
so I just want to clarify, I'm looking at Chris out there because we've had some conversation on it. So for full transparency, is a vote required to approve the rate increase? My understanding is that's automatic as part of the agreement. Can you speak to that?
Sure, yeah. In theory, no, a vote is not required from the board to approve a rate adjustment. The way the contract is structured is if Elder Art Disposal meets the performance criteria that's laid out in the contract, we have earned the right for the CPI adjustment, and that goes into effect July 1st. Based on our performance, on the performance criteria, we're eligible for that rate adjustment that will be effective July 1st.
So for the purpose of tonight, I think you've heard some testimony. You get some good comments for us to work on what that's going to look like coming back to you. Again, I'm looking at Chris. I'm not sure that we have to take any action on this item tonight because we've got direction for our staff, our teams to get together and work on what's going to come back.
Sure. Yeah, I would add past practice, Mo, and Jeff did this for many more years than I did, but we always brought it to the board for discussion and essentially a vote to ensure that the CSD and us as the community partner and the partner with the CSD were on the same page. That's why past practice, there was a vote, yes, I mean, technically the rate adjustment, shall we meet our performance criteria, is automatic July 1st.
Perfect. So with that being said, again, I'll look to Chris. When we bring this back, we can simply have a public hearing with whatever the new document's going to look like. That'll be a public hearing and vote at that time. Does that still work for you?
Yeah, correct. So if we amend and restate the contract, we combined everything, we address some of the concerns of Director Israel and others, and we bring that, right, we're presenting an amended and restated contract agreement that would have to be voted on by the board. And at that time, if we're going to amend and restate any contract, we're always going to include a current rate sheet. So at that time, technically, the board would be voting on rates again. But again, you know, that language is already into the existing contract.
Okay. So with that, being said, I don't know, Tim, was that a motion that you made, or was that just?
I didn't make a motion yet.
Okay, no. Perfect. So maybe that's direction to staff. You don't need to vote on this one. We've got clear direction. We'll bring it back at a future board meeting for a vote. Does that work?
Where's the resolution involved here?
There's no motion. There's no
answer. Okay. All right. Then, so directed. And thank you so much for your time. I guess we'll see you next month. I think this would be a good time to call for a break. Can we take a 5-minute break?
Thank you guys. Thank you. 8:27. Solicited?